this is John Amundson. I want to welcome you to the next podcast in a series of podcasts presented for you by the Psychology Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcast is to present information as timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership. I've noticed that I haven't been doing a lot of major themes, and I think that's because there has not been a major summary article. I did one on play. This is about 4 or 5 years ago, and I've done them on cryptopsychology or parapsychology and the research that some of the folks have been doing there. I've mostly been going with these little short ones. Also, I'm a little nervous that I tend to gravitate too much around very particular issues, right? So whether that's issues around exercise, fitness, religion, certain clinical practices, skepticism, ethics, things like that. So today I want to branch out just a little bit and cover two topics at least that have to do with something that may be a little bit out of my wheelhouse. So in just a second, we'll start. No one likes to take a test. Sometimes you know more is less. Put your weight against the door. All right, in the British Journal of Psychology, there's a really hilarious article. What they looked at were creatures that are the most scary and revolting to humans. They did an online survey. This is that idea of mining big data, right? You go out, often when we click on things, it'll say, hey, take this test to see if you're whatever, right? Well, in this one, they said, hey, take a look and rate these animals as to creatures that are scary and revolting. And they started cats, pandas, dogs, mice, pigeons, etc. And then this the curve, the line goes up, and it passes through ants and snakes, wasps, bees, things like that. But at the very top are maggots, spiders, and parasites. So the greatest revulsion and the greatest fear are for spiders, parasites, and maggots. In another article from the BPS, the British Psychological Society, they looked at differences in the visual cortex among adults who had played a lot of Pokemon. And it said that they scanned the brains of 11 subjects who had admitted that as younger they played a lot of Pokemon, and they were shown images of Pokemon characters as well as other things, faces, quarters, cartoons. They gave them, the other sorts of stimulus. They found that within the visual cortex in the ventral temporal region of the Pokemon experts, that is people who played a lot of Pokemon, what they found was that there was a discrete area that was most active when looking at the Pokemon characters. There's no such reason in a control group. So what they're talking about is the brain plasticity, and they also looked at this with adults who, as adults, they got very, very interested in cars, and they would show images of cars as opposed to the other more benign or neutral stimulus. And these guys have an expertise. So the argument about this is about the plasticity of the brain, that we can develop a capacity. Now, this is certainly, it's one of those ones you kind of say, duh, you'd expect it, because individuals who are very good at let's say plant identification. A colleague of mine many, many years ago, we went for a walk in some sort of forested region. He was the author of a book, The Flora and Fauna of Waterton Parks. And as he walked along, I watched him looking. And his, I'm sure, areas of his visual cortex were reacting very different from mine. I saw bushes and grass and green things and twigs and trees and that. But he knew clearly the name of everything he was looking at. And also, he would know whether they were native or introduced species, etc. Pivoting back into an area that I've talked about a lot, but it's not my fault this time. This was sent to me by Mark Ross. Mark Ross is a psychologist. He writes the column in Symposium on early career psychology and early career practices. And Mark sent me this, and it's a review of a meta-synthesis of top-tiered evidence published online. It was published in World Psychiatry, and they looked at random clinical trials and data from about 11,000 people, and they were looking at mental health disorders in relation to nutrition, and these included depression, stress, anxiety, bipolar, formal thought disorders, and including attention deficit disorder. And they were looking at the role of nutrition and nutritional supplements in the treatment of these disorders. We've talked about the biomicrome and the gut and how it relates to mental health and well-being, and how food is medicine and food is related to well-being. Physically and emotionally. And they looked at the evidence for what would be a supplement, for which supplements would actually have a main effect. And they found this. The strongest evidence was for the omega-3 supplements, polyunsaturated fatty acid, as an add-on treatment for major depression and reducing symptoms beyond the effects of just antidepressants. And there was some evidence for benefits for ADHD. They have an amino acid that they think is useful as an adjunctive treatment for schizophrenia. And folate supplements may have some add-on effect for depression and formal thought disorder as well. Omega-3s, though, did not show strong evidence for formal thought disorders and any other mental health disorders. And there's a lack of compelling evidence for the use of vitamins as E, C, D, minerals, etc., for any mental health disorder. Now, the reason this is important is because many times, you know, we're not... Our scope of practice certainly doesn't include any kind of prescriptive authority, which is for over the counter, under the counter. In other words, we ought not, as a general aspect of our practice, say, "Well, here, go buy this and take this." I don't think there's anything in our ethics that precludes us talking about certain food supplements when there's strong evidence or over-the-counter. For example, Tylenol has been shown in research by psychologists to mitigate against social anxiety. So one can certainly talk about that research and then let folks come to their own conclusions or their own use. But the idea of kind of being in prescriptive, that is saying, okay, I want you to go start taking more zinc, increase your folate, and then I want you to eat more cruciferous vegetables, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We ought not have that as a standard of practice, more as a peripheral discussion regarding what seems to be there. Now, that's important because we can get caught up in the hype. I think I did a podcast recently where I used Ice Cube, his song "Don't Believe the Hype," regarding dismissing certain practices in mental health as being pseudoscience. So I think this particular research, and I want to thank Mark for sending it over, also can speak to some of the hype or the limitations that might exist around nutritional supplements. In an article published in the Journal of Child and Adolescent Social Work, Journal of Child and Adolescent Social Work, some researchers take on these kind of draconian treatments that have been applied for kids that are estranged or rejecting of a parent. The parental alienation syndrome is one that we ought to walk around very, very carefully as professionals. Nonetheless, we do know children reject or are estranged from a particular parent for a variety of reasons. We have had advocates in this province and major workshops on these amazingly overarching attempts to reunite children with an estranged parent. You know, the court orders to remove the child from the other parent's care, regardless of the function in other domains of the child. A child may be functioning very, very well in all domains, and the only area, significant but only area, is a rejection of a mother or a father. And they'll, you know, remove them from their context of adaptability in those other domains and place them exclusively with a parent. We had this is 10, 15 years ago, person said, well, the child should be removed, should go to Saskatchewan with the dad. They'll live in Saskatchewan close to the extended family. They should be over there for about 90 days, and then they can look at returning to Calgary. These are kids that were, you know, went going to school, had friends, involved in social activities, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the idea of the salience of reuniting with a particular parent. Anyway, the reason that I'm bringing this up, and again, you know, here I go, pivoting back to stuff that I'm interested in, is that this particular paper examined all the evidence and any material related to the safety effectiveness of these programs and concludes the treatments have not been shown to be infectious, yeah, they shouldn't be, has not been shown to be effective, but in fact are potentially harmful. In other words, the long-term results are the results of these heavy lean on the estrangement issue hasn't been shown to be a benefit to the children, and quite to the contrary. In closing off, I want to read an article, or just highlight an article that was in the Mercury News, I think out of Seattle, and it says, found guilty of on-the-job sexual assaults, former Travis Air Force psychologist got sentenced to 11 years in prison. We've recently had Bill 21 introduced, which defines, you know, what constitutes improper sexual behavior, and as a result, we may, you know, be subject to similar punishments. So, in the spirit of thinking of prison and a degree of Schadenfreude, meaning taking pleasure in someone else's misfortune, I got a little song by Nelly that has to do with going to prison.
Shout out to every young brother, you know. Just doing his bed right now. Keep your head up. Just walking that yard. Wish he had wings to just, you know, fly up out of that joint.
Yeah. If I could fly away, I won't come back no more. I turn around just to see it for the last time. See, now I know, hey, that it won't be easy. I didn't fuck with the battle when I done made it this far. Got a few more feet, but it's still the longest. Man, it's the longest shot I ever had to get in my life. And see, my life ain't right if my right don't right. My chick ain't eat if the fish don't bite. My raise to grow sales like Mike did Nike. Like Big Brother Almighty, I keep a gamma ray. I'm a G5G, take a G5G, G5D to someone that.